the train. That's, I'm not calling you that.
Yes, you are. And you wouldn't be far off.
You know, you can lower the lifeguard chair.
I don't know how to do anything around here.
On the right-hand side, there's a little lever. Or do you say lever? No. Hand up. Right there.
Leave the chair where it is, but just put your shirt back on, will you?
Steve has already bailed me out today.
I forgot your new glasses.
Well, they're not new. They're Steve's. And I don't know how long you've had them, Steve, but I didn't bring reading glasses today. And if I don't have reading glasses, I can't read. So Steve came to the rescue. Thank you for that, Steve.
It's my pleasure, Bill. Anything I can do for you.
Nice.
Steve, I thought he actually got really classy because these are really high quality glasses.
Nice. Are they Bausch & Lomb, Steve?
I think they're Bausch & Walgreens.
Bausch & Walgreens.
Really? Right. Those are Walgreens?
Very nice.
Why don't you get some like that?
They're like $100.
Stop going to the dollar store and get them at Walgreens.
Well, no, I've been getting them at Walgreens. I buy that five pack of them.
Yeah, he had that look on his face like, you know, there was danger.
Yeah.
But, of course, there is a CVS within walking distance.
Oh, there is. Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's where I was going to go buy some for you.
Well, thank you for helping me out.
It's my pleasure. Really.
You look so handsome.
Thank you.
No. Oh. Maybe I'm, you know, since they're your glasses, it's like kind of a face morph.
It's going to be a big day for you.
I feel like if I buy real glasses, that I'm giving in to the fact that my eyesight is failing. Like, if I just get temporary ones, I'm like, oh, eventually my sight will come back to me.
No.
I'm kidding myself.
It will
I'm kidding myself. It will get worse because 6 months ago, if I had forgotten them, I would strain to be reading things, but I'd still be able to read it. And now, when I was growing up, I had the best eyesight.
Those were like $10 glasses. What do your temporary ones cost?
The temporary ones, I get a five pack for, I think, $19.
And they're wire, and they bend.
They break
and when
in
you
a
look
minute.
At him, Steve, a lot of times his glasses are completely diagonal, and you don't even notice.
No, I notice. I don't care. I should so care more. I don't know why I don't. Sometimes I'll scotch tape them to my forehead. They're just in
the
way.
That's a good look for you. You should go get some like that.
Like this kind.
Yeah. Can I buy those off you, Steve? He can just keep these.
You can have them.
They're like tortoiseshell, right? Is that what that's called?
Yes.
Because they're made out of tortoise shells?
They're the cheapest plastic glasses that you can buy.
The ones I have are
cheap. But you get wire and wire bends. The plastic's the way to go.
Well, I do the wire, you know, in tribute to the late John Denver. You know that, Wendy.
You know, I used to have those rounds. Think of that this weekend. I used to have those rounded John Lennon glasses.
Oh, those are nice. No, I said John Denver.
Yeah, but they both have the same.
The John Lennon are nice.
They look different on each
Harry Potter, too.
Oh, those are nice.
Start looking like Harry Potter.
Yeah. Maybe when the Elton John movie comes out, I'll get some Elton John style glasses. I'll wear those for a while.
I'd like to see that.
Maybe with little windshield wipers on them if
it
rains.
I'm sure Jim Toronto has them. You could just borrow them.
He can rent them out. If he has a booth set up here at WG, and I can just go in the morning and get them for the day. That'll be great. But once again, Steve, I thank you. You came to my rescue. I owe you one.
It's my pleasure, Bill. Really. I don't feel like I did much.
I can't stop looking at you. You look super handsome.
I thought you were going to say respectable.
No, that's still up in the air.
No, that's way up in the air.
You know what? If you have to go for one, Bill, go for the super handsome.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it's far better, isn't it? All right, there's several things we need to talk about. Number one, are you aware, Wendy? I know that you're a White Sox fan.
Yes.
But are you aware of what happened at Wrigley Field yesterday? And I don't mean the fact that the Cubs won their home opener by an overwhelming score of 10-0 over the Pirates.
Even not being a Cubs fan, it was almost exciting to hear that.
Yeah. The Cubs, in their press box, put up a retro sign originally from the 1940s, from 1945. And what you had on the sign was, it's a big sign, a picture of a poodle, a pink poodle. I have no idea what the meaning of that part of the sign was.
Drinking. That's an elephant.
Yeah, a pink elephant has to do with drinking. I don't know what a pink poodle represents. But on the sign, you've got a pink poodle, a silhouette of a poodle, the year 1945, the words press box annex, and then underneath it says, no women allowed.
With a pink poodle, no women allowed?
Okay, so...
No women admitted. I'm sorry.
I think, I haven't read this yet, but I remember Brickhouse talking about the pink poodle.
What does that mean?
Like it was where they would go have beers afterward. We'll meet you in the pink poodle.
Oh, that was the name of that area of Wrigley, maybe?
I don't know.
That
sounds dirty.
I hadn't thought of it until you just said it, but I remember him saying the, you know.
Is it a strip club?
No. It's,
no.
Yeah, but so women in the press, Cheryl Ray Stout and others. were tweeting about that, right, saying, "What? Why would you put this up?"
Yeah. So their reasoning was
retro,
because it's and it's a way of saying, look at how far we've come in only 1945. If you were a woman, this area was forbidden to you. But here in 2019, by all means, come in. But not everybody saw it quite that way. They, by the way, to their credit, I guess, quickly took the sign down.
Right.
It doesn't bother me. Why does everybody have to be so sensitive?
Well, it's not. I mean, it's offensive or bothersome to some, but it's just kind of a tone deaf thing to put. It's to be like whites only.
Right. Let's say by the drinking fountain, it said blacks and whites by the drinking fountain. Wouldn't that be upsetting? You know, they could make the same argument. Well, it's to show how far we've come, that there was a time where the drinking fountains were for different races, and now it's not that way anymore. So if I was a woman sports writer and I saw that, I don't know how I'd react. How would you, if you were in there to cover the game and you saw that,
you know what I'd do? I'd take a picture of it right away and tweet it out.
That's
and
what they
yeah.
happened.
Yeah. I mean, that's really all you can do.
Yeah.
Madeline, just remind them that it's 2019.
It's kind of funny. They finally modernized Wrigley Field and then they put that sign up.
That's true.
You know, what's weird also is the picture they replaced it with, they took it down because you know how quickly Twitter works. They people see a bunch of negative reaction on Twitter, so they took it down. And then they put up a sign for Breast Cancer Awareness Night, a picture.
No.
Yeah.
That's kind of lame.
So
sorry.
That's the part I have a hard time with. It's like, let's
going
not
from
just
one
compensate,
pink to
let's
another.
Overcompensate
yeah.
quickly.
Let's pander.
Yes. Yeah, because that's what was going on there. All right, let's take a quick break. We've got so much
see
to discuss
with you.
See why
I'm a White Sox fan?
Because of this.
Javi Baez threw his bat at a ball, got a hit. A pitcher got hit in the head with a line drive.
And everything that could happen in a game happened in that game.
And
we're talking
happened.
About a poster at the in the press box.
I know. Those ESPN broadcasting classes are paying off for
you,
Wendy. Since we're talking about sports, there's a couple of other stories that I hope you'll find interesting. When do our brackets have to be done, by the way? That's got to be coming up pretty soon.
Is it
right?
Over yet?
Yeah, it ended last night.
I did not look at 1 minute. I did not fill out one bracket. I didn't even say the word bracket the whole time till now.
It's quite a game.
I watched the last 2 minutes of overtime.
We did it perfectly because I went to bed when it went to overtime. So we watched the whole game together.
I switched over because I was expecting Stephen Colbert to be starting, but because the game went into overtime,
they trapped
it was
you.
A later, yeah. So there was 2 minutes left, and the score, there was a 1 point difference, and I'm like, I'm here.
Did you enjoy it? At least it was exciting the moment you tuned in.
I didn't know too much about, the two teams were Virginia and Texas Tech, Steve, is that right?
Yes, neither had ever been there before.
Neither had ever, all I knew about it was exactly that. That you had two teams going up against each other that had never been there before. I knew nothing else about anything going on. But, it's one of those things where if you're going to watch a game that you really don't have that much interest in, and people go, it's the last game of the how could you not be? I don't know. I don't have any affiliation to college basketball. It just kind of exists, you know? So I had it on. And to watch 2 minutes of a game, it was fine.
I don't even know if I would have stayed on it.
I wanted to mention this guy, Chris Davis. He's the Baltimore Orioles first baseman. He broke an all-time Major League record yesterday, Wendy. His 47th consecutive at-bat without getting a hit.
That would be
47.
Me. I would beat that record.
47 times in a row. Now, the part of the story that I'm not telling you is he's a really good hitter.
What happens?
It turns into
a mental game?
Yes. Yes. In yesterday's game, and I didn't get to see any of it, but I read about it, his first three at-bats, he hit line drive balls to various parts of the outfield, balls that at least once or twice should have dropped in. But you know how when things are going good, they're going really, really good, and when things are going bad, they go really, really bad? All three of these balls were right at somebody. So no matter what he's doing to try to get a hit, it's not working. He's gone 47 times, and he cannot buy a hit.
Is this one time, you know, they say press is good for you, negative or positive? Isn't this negative?
This, I would say, is negative. He seems to be handling it as well as he possibly can under the circumstances. But at some point, if you're him, you just go, this is ridiculous. I'm a Major League Baseball player. I looked up what he made, and I can't remember if it was $13 million or $17 million, which is sad, because once you're making that kind of money, it should be remembered. That's crazy money. He a couple of years ago, he finished second or third in the balloting for MVP in the American League.
What?
He's a really good player.
He and Cody Parkey should go have lunch. getting paid for nothing. Yes. Although we should join that lunch
yes.
then, too.
Yeah, we'll all be there. The other story from the world of sports was one that was mentioned earlier in the show. Dave actually brought this up. Do you know who Johnny Manziel is?
Yes.
All right, football player, won the Heisman Trophy a couple years ago. He's decided to change his name, not too drastically, but his name, he's always been Johnny Manziel, and as of this week, he is now John Manziel.
I like the Johnny.
I have to say I do too, but I'm trying to think in my head that that's got to be a thing where, I don't know if girls have this. I'm trying to think if girls have
this. Let's listen to this, Bertrand. I can't wait.
Guys have this thing where if there's a Y at the end of their name, at some point you go, I sound like I'm six. I have to update my name by dropping the Y.
Then why don't you go by Billy still?
Well, when I was a little kid, it was Billy.
Okay, and why don't you continue it?
That's hurtful.
Because you...
No, you're young at heart.
I know.
You hold on to your youth. You look like it. Your youth.
There was a year, I was in fourth grade, and I was Billy up until then. And I said to my parents, we were in a car ride, and I go, you know what? From now on, I think we're going to go with Bill.
And you pulled out a contract.
Please sign here. Mr. Cohen, could you initial at the bottom? My lawyer. I always had an attorney with me, Wendy. Always.
Mikey?
My attorney, Mikey.
My son, when he was in first grade, tried to change his name to Blaziken.
What?
Blaziken?
Yeah, he said when he was going in first place, he wanted to tell his first grade teacher his name was Blaziken, and he was very upset.
What's the meaning of that? Her,
I think it was a Pokemon name or something.
Oh.
But he's like, you told her my real name?
Was she buying the Blaziken name until then?
No, she had access to his real name. But.
Wow. Well, I wouldn't, when my parents would call me Billy, I just wouldn't answer for a while. Like, I'll show you who's boss in this situation.
Turns out they were not Billy.
Right. But do girls do that?
Yeah. I know a girl who went from Katie to Kate once she went to college.
Yeah. Lizzie, I would imagine the Lizzies dropped the Y.
Yeah, to some extent. Yeah.
I can't really change mine.
No.
Mary's? How about Mary? Did she?
To just Mare?
Mare.
Maybe.
Mares. Spike always called me Mares.
Okay, but there's not, like they said, when they grew up, they changed it like from Billy to Bill or Stevie. I don't see him ever being a Stevie.
No.
No. Were you ever Steve?
I bet you were Steven.
Only to John and Jaron coming up today on the business lunch.
Uh-huh.
I have a Michael who corrects people when they call him Mike.
If they say Mike, he does not like that.
Now he just kind of lets it go, but when he was little, he constantly corrected it. Now,
really?
Yeah, he prefers Michael.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Because at some point, as we get older and older... We shorten things, yeah. But... There comes this thing where you don't know too many. I mean, people are living into their 80s, 90s, and around 100 now. And can you pull off a name like Bobby or Billy or Jimmy or Timmy when you're 100 years old?
Why not? Who cares?
Yeah.
A lot of Johnnies do.
Johnnies live longer, like Mary, you're thinking?
No, they continue calling themselves and
Johnny.
Like my Jimmy Mack, my husband, he's Jimmy in the family because his dad was Jim. So they all call him Jimmy. I don't call him Jimmy,
you
typically.
Go with Jim.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But and his brother Bill, I still call him Billy.
Yeah. There's something kind of whimsical about that, to pull that off as
kinda
you get older
now,
and older.
Kind of wow.
Yeah.
Charlie.
Not Jimmy. Charles, not Chuck.
We had a Jimmy boss who could only be Jimmy.
Right.
Jimmy DeCastro.
Oh, there's guys, I can't, like Jimmy Buffett. Can you, if he was Jim Buffett.
That would suck.
That sound right.
John Paycheck.
Right, right.
So this disputes your whole thing.
Well, some names need the ye at the end of them. You need the Y sound to make it blend into the last name. But like, I think all the examples we gave, Jim Cagney, does that sound like a tough guy?
Well, but they're all entertainment-based, too. John Cash.
Oh, yeah, I
guess
so.
How about Bill Ray Cyrus? That wouldn't work.
No, you got to be Billy Ray Cyrus.
He is so happy someone mentioned his name right now.
No, he's in the news for something this week. I just saw his picture for something. Yeah.
For being Miley's dad?
No. Actually, to his credit, it's the first time in 10 years that he was mentioned for a reason other than being Miley's dad.
What was it?
I was very proud. Did you see the same picture I saw? Because he's got insane hair now.
When didn't he?
He always had like a mullet-y cut, but now it's just like a mullet and a shag at the same time. It's like a fountain of hair.
I'd probably like it.
Oh, believe me. Believe me. You would love it. I'll find out what the story was. I just saw it over the weekend. He was in the news for something. All right, we must take a break. It's time for the news in just a moment, and then a lot more shows. Stick around, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Thank you, Steve. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. Wendy Ray Cyrus, I almost called it.
I'll take it. I'll be okay with it.
Let me explain my dementia here really quickly, if I may. We were talking about this guy, Johnny Manziel, who for years has been named Johnny Manziel. He just announced that he wants to be John Manziel now. He's grown up right before our very eyes, John Manziel. And I said, there's something in guys' lives, although as you have pointed out and listeners have pointed out, girls, this applies to girls as well, when you make a decision to not have that Y at the end of your name anymore because you want to sound hopefully more dignified or more mature, I guess.
And just like a grown, you know, a yeah. grown-up, an adult. Right. It's tough adulting, you know.
I mentioned Billy Ray Cyrus. Doesn't sound right if his name is Bill Ray Cyrus. We got a text from somebody at 630 says, Bill Ray Cyrus sounds like a serial killer. Yeah, kind of.
Why do they always give the three names when they're...
I don't know. That's how they should profile serial killers, is if you use all three of your names, keep an eye on that person. Right. Right?
We knew in third grade when he started referring to Rufus as his middle name.
Right.
Look out, Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
It's a matter of time.
Well, this is... Billy Ray was in the news, you mentioned. He was in the studio with Lil Nas X.
The rapper.
Yeah, they did a song called Old Town. It was a remix. Billy Ray's playing the guitar.
Now, here's what was explained to me about this song. It was told to me that when the first version came out, Billy Ray Cyrus was not a part of it, and the country community did not accept this song. So they went, Lil Nas went over to Billy Ray Cyrus and said, can you help me with the song a little bit? So he chimed in on the vocals, and then all of a sudden the world of country loved the song.
That seems to, I don't know what TikTok is. I'm sorry, I'm an old lady. I asked you, you don't know. You don't know either. Bertrand, I'm betting you $5 you don't know either.
What a TikTok is?
What TikTok? TikTok.
Is that also a rapper?
No, it's like a...
Oh, it's an app.
It's okay.
It's an app.
Yeah.
It's an app.
Old.
What does the app do, Jazz?
It makes like cute little music videos, so you could take like music from, I don't know, let's say J Balvin.
Yeah.
And make it like a speedy, like a quick minute video. Kind of like Instagram, how you can do the fast forward and rewind.
Okay.
Put music on there. So all right. That's what TikTok is.
Okay. Well, Lil Nas X, I don't even know how to say this name. He broke records. His song Old Town Road debuted on the Billboard Hot 100, Hot Country, and Hot R&B Hip Hop charts simultaneously. It all started on TikTok. However, the track was removed from the Hot Country chart as it didn't fit the country genre.
Oh.
Well, entered stage left, country legend Billy Ray Cyrus, he decided to remix it and get the anthem back on the chart, as you said. And then Miley Ray Cyrus went on, I guess, to promote it, and she went topless.
Oh, she did. Is that the best thing for your dad to promote a song?
I feel sometimes that my family's a little dysfunctional, but then I hear something like this, and it's like, I'm doing okay.
Right.
Yeah, being topless is normal, and
yes,
she did this. It didn't really show anything, but, you know.
Yeah.
When your dad, this is what she posted. When your dad is number one on iTunes with Lil Nas X,
it makes your shirt fall off. You know that. That's how it. That's.
She's holding money, a sleeves covering the part that you can't show, but you see a little cleavage.
Oh, you do. All right.
That's a great promotion for your daddy.
Lil Cleavage, also a rapper. Did you know that?
It's a duet, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, you too. Really take it to the Catskills. I'm telling you, you'll kill.
We are the kings of the single entendre, Wendy.
All right, listen. About men changing their name, you could never call the guy Chub Checker.
No, of course not. It has to be Chubby Checker. So many people have chimed in on that. What about Jimmy Carter? That's true. He was the president of the United States, and his name was Jimmy. Right?
Yeah.
And you would think, like, in days of old, if somebody was running for a high office like that, somebody would say, no, you go with James Earl Carter. That's the name of a president. Not Jimmy. That's not the name of a president. But it worked.
All right. Somebody mentioned, or I mentioned, Joey Bishop off the air.
Right.
Joe Bishop.
Right.
Sammy Davis Jr. Sam Davis Jr., not going
to
work.
Sam Davis Jr. does not sound right. Samuel Davis, no, it has to be Sammy and Joey. Right, that's true. I give in to all of those.
Jodie Foster never changed it to Jode.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think there is a shortened version of Jody. You either go Jody or you go home. It's one or the other. There's no alternative on that one.
Engelbertie Humperdinck changed his name right, when he got older.
You know that's not his real name, right?
No, I have a whole list of people's real names. I don't know why I come across these things.
He changed his name to Engelbert Humperdinck.
Right.
Yeah.
Because it's more memorable than Arnold Dorsey.
Oh, yeah, I guess it would be. I think Engelbert Humperdinck is the name of a character in a novel, I believe. I think that's where he first found it.
I have. We can play a game with this later, real names.
All right. I'm in. Many people texting in saying that there was a time in their life where they just decided it was time to drop it. Somebody says, 630 says, how about Ed Munster? Yeah, that doesn't sound Ed Munster. That sounds like a real estate agent. Ed Munster Realty.
I'm trying to find some other ease.
Johnny Carson. So
never
true.
Never would have worked here. Here's John.
Right, it's so abrupt.
Yeah.
You got to have the Johnny to make Ed McMahon's voice trail off.
Danny Thomas.
Yes. Donny Osmond.
Yeah.
By the way, I'm not thinking of any of these. These are all people texting. Everybody, every one of the ones I've just mentioned has been a text. The late, great Jimmy Stewart. If his name was James Stewart.
It was, though. Wasn't it James Stewart? And Steve McQueen was billed as Stephen McQueen and the Blob
early
movie.
On, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, right.
But wasn't he James Stewart on some things?
No, I never saw his name listed as James really? Stewart anywhere. It was always Jimmy Stewart. But I think that for him, that played into his folksiness,
yes.
You know, the way he was just kind of the guy next door. So Jimmy made sense. But at some point, Jimmy was in his 70s or 80s, like Jimmy Carter, and still going with the Y at the end. Once you're that old, you can't change it. If you've made it to 50 or 60 or 70 with the Y at the end, you're almost locked in forever, aren't you?
You need to write down a manual because you got a lot of rules for names.
Nipsey Russell. Nips.
Right.
Opening for cleavage.
All right.
See, here's what happens. You say these things.
And right. You can't edit yourself sometimes.
And then you have the thought and you start laughing and then you yell at us for saying it.
Well, you don't have to complete the thought.
Yeah.
Although that was a good double bill.
Never make a full completion. Just make the motion, but don't complete it.
But you guys make me feel like I'm the ones that pull you guys down in the gutter.
Oh, you are.
It's always that way.
Absolutely.
It is always that way.
All right.
Bill Idol.
Oh, yeah, that wouldn't work.
That's never going to work. This one's stupid. I can't even say it.
Come on.
Pee Wee Herman would not have worked as just Pee Herman.
No.
No.
He tried that once, didn't he?
All right, time to take a break. It's a Tech Tuesday. We need something to save us. Are you able to tell us about sleeping?
I will try. Steve, I love...
Oh, no. Here we go. Guys, this is WGN Radio, okay?
All right.
Could you act a little professional, yes. Billy and Stevie?
Yes, of course. I love sleeping on five-star hotel quality sheets. All right.
You got to read this one first and break,
I know.
Too.
I know.
Pull it together.
I know. All right.
And that music means it is a Tech Tuesday. Typically, we talk to Bridget Carey, a senior editor at CNET. But today, senior reporter for CNET, Joan Saltzman, on the line with us. Joan, how are you?
I'm great. How are you doing?
Great. Nice to meet you. Something in the news on this Tech Tuesday, which is kind of odd. We talk about Facebook and Google a lot, but this is turned real all of a sudden because they will be testifying to Congress. Explain this.
Yeah, there are representatives for Facebook, Google, on Capitol Hill right now. They're testifying before the House subcommittee, the Judiciary subcommittee, and addressing white nationalism, the presence of white nationalism, especially after last month's massacre in Christchurch, New Zealand. There's a heightened desire to bring representatives of these tech companies to be held somewhat accountable, at least answer for how crimes like that and other kinds of hate speech and hate content can proliferate on their networks.
That is really interesting. I mean, there has to be some part of the responsibility of theirs to monitor things, but with all the things being presented to them, it seems like it's a lot of upkeep.
Yeah, that's so far during the hearing this morning, that's one of the points that these representatives are making, that they're monitoring, it's unprecedented, the scale of content that they need to monitor. And also, a lot of these decisions are difficult. You have issues of free speech bumping up against hate speech, and the line that divides one from the other, it's very hard to gauge what that is and do it in a way where you're being fair to the person's intent.
Joan, is it other companies as well, or is it strictly Facebook and Google that are involved in this?
There are other people on the panel testifying before the committee. We have Facebook's content policy team lead. His name's Neil Potts, a woman who is their lawyer for free expression and human rights at Google. And then there's other representatives, but those are the two main tech company representatives that are on the panel today.
As I said to myself, I said out loud that it's hard for them to monitor all this information that's coming over, it still seems like they're responsible, so they almost need to find a way to do that. And they have the logarithms or algorithms or whatever they are that will catch some of these words, right?
Yeah, there have been, you know, YouTube, which is Google's gigantic video service, for example, has had for a long time the ability to capture copyright violations. It's called Content ID, their system for that. On the Facebook side, Facebook has for a long time had the ability to capture and recognize pornography, nudity, those sort of things. Where we come to this debate is how well these companies prioritize safety, expanding into hate, not just pornography or things that are violating someone's copyrights, but going into issues like hate. How well do they prioritize the safety of the user versus their own growth? And that's where we've gotten to this issue where these platforms are so big, by virtue of the fact that they've relentlessly pursued growth for so long, they've created a monster that's too big for themselves even to control.
Isn't it true, Joan, that anytime there's an incident, a horrible incident, the first thing they do is they go and they check the person responsible's Facebook page, and they check what the person has Googled over the last 6 months or a year. Those are always clues. I mean, they're clues into that person's psyche that come too late, but they're still clues, right?
You know, and I think that's actually giving them a little bit more credit than they deserve.
Yeah.
You know, a part of the problem is that presumes that these platforms are monitoring to the degree that I don't think that they actually have the resources to do. Even as companies like Facebook and Google talk about how they're adding thousands of more moderators to keep an eye on their content, things are operated to such a vast degree that it would be difficult to do that sort of vetting for everything that gets reported. And there are things that just aren't being reported, too. You have to take that into account as well.
All right. Well, here's the scary thing. I don't really use I creep on Facebook. I don't post a lot of stuff anymore. Kids are not into it at all. Teenagers and even 20-year-olds are more into Instagram and Snapchat. But if you delete your Facebook page, explain how it can still track you. This is scary.
Right. So one of our reporters has a great story out today about how he has gotten into the habit of deactivating his Facebook account, which is not exactly like deleting your account. It's a step in the middle between having an active account and completely erasing yourself from Facebook. Deactivation, you would assume, and he assumed, meant that the company wouldn't be tracking his behavior while he's just reading the internet at large. But what he's found is that deactivation does not necessarily mean that Facebook stops tracking your behavior online. It doesn't mean that when you maybe reactivate your account, what happens is all that activity that you've been doing has been compiled so that you can continue to be targeted ads that suit your new interests.
All right. And something, there's a word, unicorn, that I thought was magical and fairy-like. There's a new term, unicorn, and I didn't know what this was. Explain this.
So unicorns are private companies that reach an estimated valuation of at least $1 billion. And the reason they're called unicorns is because they're supposed to be sort of incredibly rare and magical. But the latest a report recently shows that we're at a number of 147 companies that are unicorns. So they're not as rare as they are supposed to be.
So there's money to be had out there, people.
It sounds like it.
What are some of the companies that have reached unicorn status that surprise you?
Well, you know, the thing about unicorns is they're not really companies that would surprise people that are paying attention to Silicon Valley. You know, these companies have been unicorns for a while, but Airbnb, Uber, Slack, Pinterest, at least in Silicon Valley, those are all companies that have been buzzy for a long time. So it makes sense that they would be.
Are they all tech companies, Joan? I didn't hear you say that. Are they or not?
They're not necessarily all tech companies, but that's where the kind of center of all this money being poured into companies is. That's where a lot of this venture capital money is flowing, and so that's where these private companies have the capability to reach that kind of valuation before going public.
Casper, the bed manufacturer, is on that list.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah,
wow.
See, another one that you've heard of, but there you go, worth more than $1 billion.
Wow.
I helped make them a billionaire.
Joan, we have less than a minute, but I'm curious about this story about the black hole, the Event Horizon Telescope story about the black hole. Can you just do that one kind of quickly?
Yeah, sure. So black holes are fascinating things, and we have an idea of what they look like, but only from illustrations. And this week we're supposed to get our first actual picture taken of a black hole called Sagittarius A, which is thousands of light years away, but it will give us our first peek at what a black hole really looks like.
That's very exciting.
I am kind of intrigued by that. Perfect. Joan Saltzman, senior reporter for CNET. You can find her on Twitter at Joan_E. Thank you so much. We like talking to you on a Tech Tuesday. We appreciate it.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Joan. Appreciate it. Coming up, the stories that matter with Steve Bertrand from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom here on WGN Radio.
Thank you, Steve. One of my favorite times of the year is when new words are released.
Oh, are there new words out?
Well, this is the one that's going on dictionary.com, which, sorry, Merriam-Webster, when I look something up, I kind of...
Do you go to dictionary.com now?
I kind of think I do.
Oh.
What do you do? Do you still... I still have a dictionary. I can't get rid of it.
Yeah.
I never use it, but...
We use our Scrabble dictionary all the time. Because we play Scrabble or Upwards, so that's always nearby. So that's the handy one for us.
You don't look online for things?
Sometimes, I guess, yeah.
Because there are a lot of words. My vocabulary is not that great. So if there's a word that I don't know, I look it up immediately. Because who couldn't
to improve
stand?
Yourself.
Yes.
Sure, of
to
course.
To learn a new word.
Sure.
Well, the newest addition to dictionary.com, the newest additions of words include cultural and identity terms that have gained popularity. I got to tell you, I do not know how to say this one.
Oh.
It's...
Sound it out, Wendy.
Wimixon, women. But it's instead of having the man inside woman.
Wendy, come on.
It's WOMXN. It denotes,
what does that mean?
It denotes gender fluidity and inclusivity. Now, come on.
So when would somebody use this word, Womanixon?
I don't know how to say it. A woman used especially in intersectional feminism as an alternative spelling to avoid the suggestion of sexism perceived in the sequences M-A-N or M-E-N, and to be inclusive of trans and non-binary women.
Oh, all right.
I don't know what that means. What's non-binary? What is wrong?
I'm not sure when someone would use... I've never seen or heard this word before. I mean, obviously, if enough people are using it, it's going to make the dictionary, but I don't know when I would use it.
I've never seen it used. It's pronounced woman.
It is pronounced?
Yeah,
like the word woman? Oh, so they're trying to avoid...
The name man inside woman. That's what I said, and you got all...
I thought you were going for the gutter.
No!
All right.
For once. So that's a word that's been added. I've never seen that used.
No, I have not.
Jasmine, have you seen that used anywhere?
No.
Yeah.
I'll keep my eyes open for it.
Womp womp.
womp womp, meaning something sad has happened. Yeah.
Used to dismiss or to mock a failure or loss, to comment or judge with the dismissive or mocking expression.
I didn't know that was a word. I thought that was a thing that people just said to be funny, but
it was a sound effect. Yeah. Now it is a word, womp, womp.
Are there exclamation points after it? No?
No.
It seems like it needs the juice behind it, doesn't it? If you just say womp, womp, it doesn't... You gotta act it out almost. That's a word you have to act out to make it effective.
And would you spell it that? I mean, I guess technically it is, but you go womp, womp.
W-H-U-M-P-P-P, W-H-U-M-P-P-P. Womp, womp.
This is W-O-M-P. Mm. Yours is womp.
Yeah, mine's womp. Yeah. It's womp. It's womp. It's in my head.
This is a word that I started using when our former producer, I started seeing, rather, when our former producer, Kevin Richter, he said it a lot.
Please leave me alone.
Aside from that.
What was it?
Welp. With a P on the end
all
of
right,
it.
So when he was our producer, I would hear him say it, but I don't know what it means.
It's just another version of well. It's an informal variant of well. It's used to indicate disappointment, resignation. And he why did resign, so maybe that's why he used it. And he was disappointed in us.
Every day.
Or acceptance at the beginning of an utterance. And he would use it most frequently, like, what do you want to do about this guest we have coming up? And he'd go, welp.
So when there was indecision, he would go, welp. But if there was more a definite yes or no, it would be well? Is
no,
that the
he always said welp. You
he
can
did.
Use it interchangeably, but he made the jump to welp.
Oh.
And I've heard a lot of people say that. I've seen it on Facebook a lot.
Really?
Welp.
Interesting.
When did it turn into that?
He was the only person I ever heard use it.
Cry bully is a new word that's been added to dictionary.com.
I can't even imagine. Obviously, it has to do with bullying. And yeah. Somebody's making somebody cry, but I don't know beyond that.
It is a person who self-righteously harasses or intimidates others while playing the victim, especially of a perceived social injustice.
Is Jesse Smollett a cry bully?
Yes.
Is there a picture of him at dictionary.com?
Yes.
There is. That happens
very
fast.
Handsome. He's very handsome.
That
Here's the
very
thing.
Fast.
It's just another group of cry bullies who can't cope with anyone's... Boy, that's hard to read when ads pop up, I'm telling you.
If I was in the middle of that sentence, I would have to grasp to come up with the word cry bully. Wouldn't you? Maybe because it's so new. It wouldn't automatically come to me if I was using a story where that person was involved, where somebody who might be a cry bully was involved. I wouldn't go to that word automatically.
I wouldn't either. Here, white lash. It's a hostile or violent reaction by white people to the advances or influx of other racial or ethnic groups.
All right, I knew
white
that
lash.
Existed. I didn't know there was a word for it.
I never heard that word, yeah.
The word, actually, I have to say, for what that word is, it says what it
backlash,
needs to say.
White lash.
Yeah.
Info dump. I've heard that.
So that would be like a website where so much information is just kind of thrown in that there's almost too much of it?
Very good. A large quantity of backstory or background information applied all at once.
Yeah. All right. That one makes sense, too.
Toxic masculinity has been added to dictionary.com.
I suffer from that, but I don't know what it is.
It's a cultural concept of manliness that glorifies stoicism, strength, virility, and dominance, and that is socially maladaptive or harmful to mental health.
Yep.
You don't suffer from that.
I thought I did, but it went away.
You never...
I took some Pepto-Bismol, and I'm fine now.
I mean, you're a strong, virile man.
Yes, I am, Wendy.
But you have a sensitive side, too, and you're not afraid to talk about
right.
that. So
I'm like a McDLT.
The cold
hot side, cold side. Put them together.
Hot stays hot, the cold stays cold. That was one of the best inventions.
Didn't last long, did it?
A lot of styrofoam used in that.
Yeah, too much styrofoam. That was the problem.
Brain, that's been around for a while.
Yeah, where people have a lapse of memory.
Yes,
yeah.
A brief mental lapse, especially in an instance of forgetfulness.
It's not
or confusion.
A pleasant thought when you think about what that word is.
My brain doesn't do that.
No.
Girls' brains
no.
don't do that.
Nope.
Bromosexual. That's funny.
So,
bromosexual.
I don't know. I'm not sure what they're going for with this.
Informal, noting or relating
is it
to
like bromo seltzer?
No. Informal, noting or relating to a close but non-sexual friendship between two men, typically a hetero man and a gay man.
So has this replaced, there was a word that was new to us a decade ago, bromance. Is this the new word for that?
Well, a bromosexual would probably have a bromance.
Oh, it'd be somebody who's involved in one, right? Okay.
They're
so it's just a, they've thrown another word onto the fire.
Yes, and okay. You know, you just learned recently what FOMO is, F-O-M-O.
You told me and I don't remember.
Fear of missing out.
Fear of missing out, right.
Which, think about it. I mean, I liked to be invited to parties and go to parties when I was in high school. And if you didn't get invited,
yeah,
which was very rarely for me because we just crashed parties, I could see where you'd feel that you're missing out on something.
Yeah, I could see that,
And with social media now, I mean, come on, there would be people like maybe you'd want to hang with and they say, no, I have other plans tonight. Or, you know, I got to stay in and nurse my, you know, baby brother who's sick.
Yeah.
And then these days you would see on Instagram or whatever, they didn't stay home and handle their little brother. They were out with someone else.
So you would suffer from
FOMO because of that. Yeah. So that's been out for a while.
What's styrofoam? What is that?
Just like a McDLT.
Is that what that is?
Yes, everything comes back to the McDLT.
It does, doesn't it?
But now, so FOMO's been out there. Now JOMO's out there.
Eddie and JOMO? Those guys are the best. What's JOMO?
J-O-M-O.
So it's still of missing something of missing out.
Yes.
I don't know what it would be, though.
The joy of missing out.
The joy of missing out.
A feeling of contentment with one's own pursuits and activities without worrying over the possibility of missing out on what others may be doing.
Oh.
So, you know, after a hard work week, if you want to lay on your couch on a Friday night and watch a couple of movies and order a pizza, that's JOMO, the joy of missing out. You don't want to go out.
So you have told us about JOMO, FOMO, and BROMO. Who are...
the new dwarfs?
Yeah. Those are Snow White's new online friends.
This is a term that someone texted me yesterday when we were talking about the baby cribs. And they said, oh, you got to get rid of that stuff. We're going to take a break, but there's a term. I'll explain it all when we come back.
All right.
These are words that have been added to dictionary.com. If you know of any or want to jump in on this, 312-981-7200. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder at 720 WGN. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. It's WGN Radio. We're talking about the new entries at dictionary.com. And I wanted to tell you about one that I learned yesterday from a texter, although I didn't reveal it on the air. But first, Jonathan has called us. Hey, Jonathan.
Hi, Bill. Hi, Wendy.
What's going on, Jonathan? What have you got for us?
Well, I've got two words. There are others, but I can't remember them now. I'm getting older.
Oh, that's right. So,
first is USAN. USAN.
And that's that's a real word already?
No, it should be words.
All right, what is USAN?
Yeah. It's somebody from the United States.
Oh,
because if you say American,
right,
it could be Central, South, North, whatever. So this designates the United States.
So capital U, capital S, A-N.
Right.
All right, I like that word. That seems serviceable.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the second one is Parkesia, which is 5 minutes after going to a mall, you've forgotten where you parked your car.
I love that.
It affects everybody.
Oh, my God. It does affect everyone. Thank God for
that. Please use both of those.
Parkesia and you. I like Parkesia better if I had to choose
one.
Pretty great.
Very good, Jonathan. Thanks so much.
Well,
have a good week.
I listen all the time.
Oh, we appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
That happens all the time. I'm glad I have a panic button on my car. Do you ever use that to find where you've parked?
I have more than once, yeah. It's come
to
the rescue.
What is it? And I make a mental note when I get out, like, okay, I'm by the M in Mariano's.
Right.
But when I come out, all of a sudden,
it's different.
But it isn't.
No,
I should remember that.
Right. Yeah.
Here is something called death cleaning.
I don't know what death cleaning is.
Nor did I, Bill, but this all makes sense to me. Yesterday, we were talking about you didn't save the cribs for your girls.
No, we got rid of them right away.
Bertrand did, and I did.
Yeah.
And somebody said Goodwill and other places won't take it because of safety issues. Perhaps there's been new
things.
And somebody texted and said, Wendy, get your ass up into the attic and clean that stuff out because you are leaving a mess for your loved ones when you die.
Right.
And I didn't know that there was a term, but that's death cleaning, the process of cleaning and decluttering one's home as to spare others, especially family members, from the chore of it after you die.
Oh, that's interesting.
That's right, because they're all just so deeply in mourning over your passing.
Yes.
That they just
couldn't possibly
take a few minutes to go look and see what valuable items might be in the attic.
Sometimes when you lose someone, you are so grief stricken that you can't go through their stuff for a while. Second of all, take a few minutes. I am the queen of all things clutter.
Yeah.
Poor Jim and the boys. Yeah. Oh my God, they are. They are gonna go. I think I'm MacGyver sometimes, so I save like little pieces of wire or something that might come in handy.
You turn those into a suit.
No, there have been sometimes I'm rewiring a light, and it's like, oh,
right.
Oddly enough, it's buried somewhere in a closet, but I know where it is.
Right. No, I understand.
When I die, if I die before all of them in my house, they will curse me.
Right. Right.
They'll be like, what in God's name was she keeping this for?
Oh, they might just laugh and go, hey, that's mom.
That's what they'll do, Wendy.
You say
they'll laugh.
Going through it a couple of minutes.
No, it's weeks, right?
It could be months.
Right. You know,
and there are sometimes, you know, when you lose a spouse or something where you don't even want to look at their clothes.
Too painful.
Yeah.
Right.
So you leave it for a while.
Yeah.
I mean, I have all my important documents, but God knows where they are.
Yes.
You don't know where they are, Wendy.
They're somewhere in the house, though.
Yeah.
Right. Well, make it a game. Turn it into like a treasure map game. Your boys are pirates, aren't they?
Yes.
They love treasure map games.
Find my birth certificate. Find my social security card.
I have that information.
You know where the
like the major stuff.
It's in a file cabinet or something somewhere, probably.
Similar to that, yes. I'm not going to give it away.
No. I'll just tell them it's your life insurance policy. The kids will find it in no time.
Right. Right.
I will have my family call you.
Oh, all right.
Hey,
that's
Bill,
fair.
Any idea what she mentioned is...
So the title of this, the new word for this...
Death cleaning.
...is death cleaning, which sounds very drastic.
It does, but it makes total sense.
It makes sense. Yeah, it does.
Here's another... We talked about... all right, Generation Z.
Right. This has come up more than once.
We are... What are we?
We boomers. Are farmers. Dun, 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 dun.
Boomers.
Well, I might be a little younger than you are, David.
You were born in the late 50s or early 60s?
Early
60s.
Yeah, you might be on the very
I'm
tail
a cusper.
End. Yeah. Yeah. So let's say it's baby boomers, then...
Gen X.
Gen X.
Mm-hmm.
Gen Y...
Then millennials.
Millennials. Now, what's Generation Z? Are they the ones that
generation
are
born after the mid-90s. So this is my son, your daughters.
I think so, right.
So they they have no clue on reality.
All right, David, that's a terrible thing to say.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
Explain.
They don't have the experience of realizing that televisions, you had to get up and go across the room to the TV
to change the channel. Well, times change. You know, my grandparents had
they don't know anything about UHF. Everything for them is the cable box.
Who cares, though? What do they need to know about that?
It's just knowing some history.
Well, there's something to be said for that.
Mary,
they do know vinyl.
Yeah, that's true, because that's made a big resurgence. Mary, you said you have one or more than one?
No, my 22-year-old's my youngest, and he was just saying how he was Generation Z the other day. And I was like, how old does Generation Z go to?
Late teens, early 20s, I think.
It just says a generation born after the mid-1990s, because there's not one after there yet.
Right.
No, they're going to have to start with the alphabet.
Yeah,
again.
Gen A?
How are they going to do that? We did X, Y, Z.
Yeah.
But these kids, you know, to anything technical... They help me, you know.
Yeah, of course.
Take that, David.
Yeah, it's true, though. I am so bad at all that stuff. It's like that's where I go to answers. Mm-hmm. My son and his girlfriend.
Put them in a room with a dial phone and see how many of them know what to do with it.
Well, they won't, but
Come on, guys. I know there's videos running around about, you know, there were kids that didn't know what to do and how to dial. You can figure it out.
Have you seen that video? It's hysterically funny because they have no idea what to do.
But I'm kind of surprised because, you know, you can figure it out.
Right.
If you can play a video game and shoot someone.
Yeah, but everything they know is a button with a number.
Right.
They never had the experience of a dial phone. I mean,
thank God.
There are people who have no concept of what's a payphone. They don't know what they are.
Yeah, although they're not even still out there, are they?
Payphones few and far between.
Very few and far between, but there's some still are in existence.
When's the last time you used one, David?
Since I had a cell phone? Never.
Nobody carries dimes anymore.
I mean, you know,
it wouldn't be a dime. It would be like a dollar now.
Put Superman out of business. Nowhere to change clothes.
It's like, what's the line? The new anti-theft device for cars? Get a stick shift.
That's easy. All right, let's take a break. A lot more coming up. Stick around, Bill and Wendy, WGN. Thank you, David. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. Wendy, at the end of every episode of The View, they say, take a little time to enjoy The View. But will we still be able to enjoy The View after reading Ladies Who Punch, the explosive inside story of The View? Ramin Sudatet joins us right now. He is the author of the book we just mentioned. Ramin, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you guys so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
I have to tell you, if I just can jump in for a moment, Bill absolutely adores The View.
Love it.
I have not watched very much of it. You don't miss it, do you, Bill?
Do I miss it?
I mean, you watch it every day,
don't you? Yeah, since the beginning. It's been on for, 21 years? 20 years?
22 years, and so did I. You know, I've been an entertainment journalist. I'd written about a lot of different things, but whenever I wrote about The View, there was always a very large audience and a lot of interest in the show. And my book really is a celebration of the show. It's a behind-the-scenes look at the show. It's a, it's an examination of how influential and important the show is, and also how it changed television.
Let's talk about that aspect for just a little bit. Why do you think that this show, why do you think The View had such an impact on the course of TV history?
So the show was launched in 1997, and it's funny now because when you watch TV, all of TV is opinion. You turn it on, whether it's CNN or whatever you watch, it's all newscasters discussing their opinion, telling you what they think. When Barbara Walters started the show, that was such a taboo idea that the ABC executives thought it would tarnish her reputation and end her career. Journalists weren't allowed to talk about what they thought. There was no Twitter. There was no YouTube. There was no, outlets for journalists to constantly be posting on Instagram and sharing their feelings about everything. And so I think she really sort of was ahead of her time and ushered in this entire era that we're in right now where, everyone tells you everything they think at all hours of the day.
I remember her saying her original intent, Barbara Walters' original intent, was to get three generation of women up together, and whatever the news of the day was, you'd get the viewpoint of somebody who was a little older, somebody of medium age, and somebody younger, and they've kind of pulled that off to an extent, right?
They have. I mean, depending on what season you're looking at,
yeah.
But I go back and I look at how she found the four original co-hosts, Meredith Vieira, Joy Behar, Star Jones, and Debbie Matenopoulos. And even though that was her conceit to be multi-generational, it didn't really work out for Debbie, who was 22 and fresh out of college, and she had no idea how to do live TV with a broadcasting icon, Barbara Walters. It was a really difficult and intimidating experience for her, and she talks about all that in the book and, all the things that go wrong and how she eventually got fired from the show.
I remember when it debuted was 97-ish?
97, yes.
All right, I remember when it debuted, and I love Barbara Walters, so I did tune in. Mm-hmm. I did watch that first season, and it was very interesting and very fresh, something I hadn't seen before. But through all its carnations, I don't know. I don't even know who's on it now. And what do you think of today's cast versus that original?
So it's had some ups and downs. There have been seasons that have been really successful and cast that have been really successful, and then seasons that haven't been doing as well. I think that they've stabilized the show. After Barbara Walters left in 2014, there was a very tumultuous year where Rosie O'Donnell and Whoopi Goldberg were both really trying to be the moderator, and there was a lot of behind-the-scenes tension and drama. I think in 2019, the show is stable. The ratings are up. And I think they found the balance with, Joy Behar as a liberal and Meghan McCain and Abby Huntsman as the conservatives. And I think the Trump administration gives them plenty to talk about every single day. So there's no shortage of hot topics.
And you know, since you watch it, Ramin, they're fighting almost every day. Hardly a day goes by that there's not some sparks flying between Joy and Meghan. You know that, right?
Are they respectfully fighting or not?
Sometimes,
really?
Not always.
Well, I may start watching again.
Yeah.
You should watch. The show's really good.
Yeah.
I mean, I think
nice
that
show.
Sometimes, I think that what I describe in my book is that the debates are, you know, they start out as respectful and then sometimes it gets intense and heated in the same way that it does during Thanksgiving dinner with family. And, you know, sometimes it just goes a little too far and then you pull it back.
Part of the fight yesterday, Ramin, was Meghan McCain saying to Joy Behar, part of your job is to listen to me. Joy didn't take that too well. Did you get to see that yesterday?
I saw that. Well, Joy said, I listened to you, and then Meghan replied. So I think there was like a little bit of a back and forth. But I think sometimes, you know, I think it mirrors the conversations that we often see in this political era where, you know, someone who's conservative and someone who's liberal are having a hard time seeing eye to eye given sort of the current political environment.
Whenever people ask me why I watch it every day, what we're talking about now is the reason why. It's very uncomfortable, and I think most TV shies away from that. Most TV wants everybody smiling and happy. The View doesn't always want that, and they don't always get it.
And it kind of started, it started before there was reality TV. So there was no, you know, Survivor yet. There was no The Real Housewives yet. And it offered sort of this glimpse into these women who were friends, and then sometimes they weren't friends, and, you know, Star Jones's wedding hijacked the entire show in 2004, and Star was, you know, fired very publicly, and she left very publicly. So there is so much history on the show and sort of what evolved, you know. Barbara never wanted it to be a very dramatic show. She wanted it to be a very calm show, but it kind of sort of, that wasn't possible, and it changed and evolved, and obviously when Rosie O'Donnell came in 2006, which is a big part of my book, the show then completely changed and became very political because she was going on TV every day talking about George W. Bush's policies and was very passionate about what she thought and very pointed in what she had to say about the administration.
Yep, yep. We're talking about a new book out about The View called Ladies Who Punch, the explosive inside story of The View. Ramin Sudhatay is our guest. We'll take a little break and then come back with more. It's Bill and Wendy with you on WGN. Our guest is Ramin Sudhatay. He has written a book called Ladies Who Punch, the explosive inside story of The View. Everything you want to know about behind the scenes over at The View. All right, so here's a couple of things that have happened since your book was announced, Ramin, and I know you're well aware of them. But Rosie O'Donnell, apparently, I've not read your book yet. I can't wait to read it. But Rosie O'Donnell.
You should get it. You should get it today.
Oh,
I'm
good.
I'm excited for you to read it.
I can't wait. All right, so Rosie O'Donnell says that while she was on The View and fighting with Elizabeth Hasselbeck, what was also happening is she had a crush on her. She says it was a non-sexual crush, but it was a crush nonetheless. And Elizabeth didn't take this news very well.
Well, I think I was a little surprised. Did you watch when Elizabeth was on that day?
Yes.
I was a little surprised about her response because I thought it was a little blown out of proportion. I think Rosie was in her way talking about how she was fond of Elizabeth and liked her and appreciated her and wanted to be friends with her. And I think Elizabeth took it kind of extreme, and the language she was using was a little puzzling to me. She was very defensive about it.
Yes.
Elizabeth should be lucky she was even on that show. I watched her on Survivor. I was kind of surprised that she ended up on The View and quite honestly got a little full of herself. I think that's rude that she didn't just thank Rosie and say, wow, thank you.
But she had a tough task. And Ramin, tell me if you agree or disagree with this. It was always her against the other four panelists. And even though I almost always disagreed, I'd say 95% of the time Elizabeth said something I disagreed, it was really hard to hold her own against four women coming at her from all directions.
Right. So she was the foil at the table. So she was always in constant disagreement with everyone. And yeah. I think that is an exhausting thing to experience, but I also think that in the book I describe sort of Elizabeth's evolution from being, you know, this woman, young woman on Survivor to being this, you know, conservative brand that really sort of the entire Republican Party looked to espouse their opinions and their conservative ideals. And it was, it became very, the show became very heated in the Elizabeth era. And also she was very, she would get very heated. There's an audio that was released a few days ago that's in my book where she quits in the middle of a commercial because she feels disrespected by Barbara Walters. And so that's another sign that these aren't, you know, these aren't debates that are scripted. These aren't debates that are planned. This is actual passion. And, you know, women talking about politics with, you know, with their arms up.
Can we call that era the Elizabethan era? Are you comfortable with that?
I think there's another Elizabethan era, but I prefer the views Elizabethan era. Yes, I like that phrase.
That's fair. All right, now what's happened since then? I'm sure you're aware of this. Rosie O'Donnell yesterday said that she's not happy with her involvement in this project, that she feels she shouldn't have done this. You know that, right?
I saw the headline. I saw the interview that she gave. I think she was on a red carpet over the weekend. Look, I have interviewed Rosie O'Donnell many times over the years. She is incredibly influential to the daytime TV landscape. I think she changed the trajectory of The View and changed the show. We sat down for a conversation for the book. I appreciate that she agreed to talk to me. And I don't know if she's read the book, but I do hope that, you know, one day she'll read the book. I think she's just basing her answer off of the headlines, which, you know, is only an excerpt or a few words. So my hope would be that she would read the entire book. But I have nothing but respect for Rosie O'Donnell, and I think what she did on The View was truly groundbreaking.
Let's talk a little bit about Jenny McCarthy's time on the show. She's not too pleased with her time on the show. She says that it was not among her best days. What do you think?
She gave me a very honest interview and talked about how when Jenny McCarthy came to The View in 2013, this was the second Obama term, and many ABC executives started to worry. It's funny to think of this now because we're so political in every aspect of our lives, but the ABC executives were worried the show would become too political. So they fired Elizabeth, they fired Joy Behar, and they bring in Jenny McCarthy to talk about reality TV, celebrities, pop culture, and to make The View more fun. Within a few weeks, they realized this was a terrible and wrong decision, not the hiring of Jenny, but the idea of going away from politics. 30% of the audience left with Elizabeth. They missed the debates. They liked the politics on the show. And so Jenny had to swivel back and become political, and she wasn't a very political person. And the other thing that was really hard for her that year was it was Barbara's last year before she was retiring. And Barbara was very frustrated and sometimes took out her frustrations on Jenny because she was the new co-host there.
Who do you think is the worst or two worst cast members they've ever had? Who was on the show that just did not belong on the show?
I think that they had Paula Faris. Do you remember her from Good Morning America?
Sure.
She's from here. We loved her here.
Yeah.
I don't know if she worked out there very greatly.
I don't think she worked on the show because I think as a journalist, she wasn't always giving her opinions, and she wasn't I think they cast her maybe as the conservative, but she wasn't conservative enough on the show. And I think Candace Cameron Bure from Fuller House was the same. They brought her in to be the conservative, but she didn't really follow politics. She was conservative in some ways, but she wasn't very political. And I think you actually need someone, when you cast the conservative, you need someone that will talk about being a conservative on the show and will actually debate. Otherwise, it ends up becoming, you know, a homogenous group of everyone agreeing about everything.
Can I throw in one more name?
Yes, please do.
Raven Simone.
Oh.
That's so Raven, Bill.
She wasn't political either. But I think that to Raven's defense, it wasn't. She came in sort of during the era where they weren't sure if The View was going to be political or not. So they brought her in as the millennial voice, and you know she was good about talking about fun things. But you're right. When the 2016 election was starting up, she wasn't. You know, she wasn't sort of up in all the news, and she wasn't really following all the stories. So she didn't have a strong viewpoint on politics.
What do you make of this? The guy who was behind The View, you rarely saw him on camera, but he was a part of every show, was a man named Bill Getty, who's an extreme right-winger, yet he was helming a show that leaned way to the left. How did they pull that off?
So Barbara Walters created The View, and Bill Getty was her longtime executive producer, and it was actually Bill's influence and idea to bring in Elizabeth. So Bill was a conservative. He would watch the show, and he felt like, it was successful. It wasn't successful, and then it became successful. It became sort of a phenomenon on TV. And then with Lisa Ling there, after a few seasons, the numbers kind of flatlined, and it was Bill's idea that we need to shake up The View. Half of the country isn't watching the show because it's four or five liberal women all agreeing with each other, and it was his idea that we have to hire a conservative, and that decision ultimately led to them bringing on Elizabeth. So I think Bill's perspective and idea to bring in a conservative was very important to the show, and the fact that he was conservative changed the show.
You know what? Somebody just texted in and said, you know, I hate the fighting. I can't watch it. And I honestly agree with that. I really feel that's why I haven't made it a habit. I like what interesting women have to say about things. But in this day and age, it's like everybody just yells and picks at each other. It's like you can't have a conversation if your views differ anymore. That's just my thought.
Barbara's hope was, I think that's a valid point. And I think Barbara's hope was that this show would bridge the divide. It doesn't always successfully do that. And sometimes the debates are really intense. But I think her sort of founding principle and what she would always espouse when she was on the show before she retired was that we have to have these discussions in a civilized way. And then we can, break for a commercial and everything will be fine.
Yeah.
She didn't really want it to be like American Gladiators fighting. So she wanted it to be more civilized.
I can't wait to read the book, Ramin. Again, the book is called Ladies Who Punch, The Explosive Inside Story of The View. Available when?
Available now. It came out last week. It's in bookstores and at Barnes & Noble, and it's also available on Amazon.
Incredible. Perfect.
Sounds really good.
Thanks, Ramin. I really appreciate it. Hope you have a great rest of the week.
Thank you so much for having me.
Ramin Sudatez, his name, and again, the book is called Ladies Who Punch, The Explosive Inside Story of The View.
All right, now I can tell you coming up what's happening on the stream with us. This is sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men, What's Hot and What's Cold. Social etiquette rules that we should all follow, and that's perfect coming out of this interview, because really that's kind of why I didn't like to watch it. I can't watch Cops either when people like hit each other.
Yeah.
There's
not that much hitting on The View.
I know, but it's kind of disrespectful sometimes to one another.
Yeah.
You, on the other hand, like that.
Love it. Coming up, the stories that matter with David Jennings from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom right here on WGN Radio.